Okay, so we're in Prospect Village, Nova Scotia, about a half hour outside of Halifax, right on the ocean, right on the bay, Prospect Bay, just a bit in from the Atlantic Ocean, and beautiful sunny day. Outside of Deborah's window, you can see the bay and some of the boathouses, and it's really kind of a quaint and most sort of postcardish kind of picture of Nova Scotia that you can imagine. And Deborah,
in fact, it has been a postcard many times.
That's right. So I'm here because Deborah is making. What are you making, Deborah?
I'm attempting to make a Tibetan ceremonial parasol, which the Sakyam says is necessary for the first day of the Rigdon Abhisheka.
That's today.
That's today. But we only found out about it sort of, I don't know, early last week, I guess. And so I got all the materials together, but I haven't had time to do much with the materials until now.
Until now. Here we are.
So this was Jim's idea, because I was trying to come up with, you know, what lightweight... still dripping water. What lightweight circular frame is going to work?
So we're looking at a hula hoop here, a blue plastic hula hoop with the yellow ribbons holding it.
Yeah, I put the spokes on. And it had, and when I did this, the first time I put the spokes on, I lifted it up in the center and discovered that it wouldn't balance and realized it was weighted. So this morning Jim cut it and it's dripping water. It had water in it that would, I guess maybe that helps it if you're using it as a hula hoop. I don't know.
It has water inside it?
It had water, but we've been getting it out. So, because, you know, we need it to balance here. I hope it will.
That's very strange. Oh, hold it up a second.
Hold it up. I have to show you the other parts, which are, that's the frame, the basic frame.
Okay.
Now the other parts, you want to bring this along? You
know,
they're down drying. I'll show you our whole design here.
Okay.
And the fabric is going to go across here. I'll show you all the fabric parts when we go back upstairs.
Okay.
And then this will keep it together. So we're hoping that it will, you know, this is enough to hold it up.
To hold the weight of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the costume, I'm going to carry it through the crowd. So we will see. So.
Okay.
I'll show you the other parts. Here's the top. This is the same brocade as the shrine backdrop brocade.
It's beautiful. Sort of a pale golden brocade.
And I'm doing this all from memory of what the Vidyadhara taught me. I've never made one this size. I've made smaller ones for Abhishekas and stuff, but I've never made a personal use one before.
So you made these for the Vajrayini Abhishekas, or?
You know what? I don't even
remember.
It was in Boulder, and I think it was might have been the first Chagasambara Abhisheka, but it also, I made some for some kinds of things that Khyentse Rinpoche was giving and also the Karmapa. But I wasn't a tantrika at the time, so I couldn't go to them. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how they were used. Mm. They're still around somewhere.
I bet one was for the Sakyam Abhisheka.
Probably.
The first Sakyam Abhisheka.
Yeah. Well, I was there.
You were there.
And I made all his robes and stuff for that, robes. I don't remember, but I might have.
Okay, so at that time, whatever the occasion was, Trungpa Rinpoche gave you some kind of instructions on what a parasol is.
Yes, he drew some little pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to figure out how to turn them into three-dimensional fabric things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just measuring a pleat. So what goes on that gold brocade top that you just photographed is There's a stool, Walter, if you want.
Okay.
Over there, it has some shells on it.
Okay.
This is a piece of brocade that's left from joining heaven and earth, mm-hmm. which I'm sewing this white silk on in pleats. Mm-hmm. This white silk is left from the Parinirvana, and we dug it out of a trunk. So this is coming together from many blessings all of these fabrics have.
This is amazing. You have some sort of like a fabric record of the history of the Sangha here.
Somewhat. Hand me that tape measure that's on the lamp there. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be easier to use than this one. Thank you. Yeah, I'm just a little bit anxious about getting this, about not holding up the Abhisheka.
At this point, I asked Deborah about a conversation that she had with His Holiness Karmapa, the 16th Karmapa.
Well, what he told me was if I learned to make all the monastic wear, the basic monastic wear, that when he came back, he would teach me to make a Gyanpopa hat.
Oh.
And then he died. So, a few years ago, when people in our Sangha first started to go and meet the 17th Karmapa, I gave Linda Krieger a letter saying that I was waiting for him to come and teach me to make a Gyanpopa hat.
Any other brocade stories?
Brocade stories. Oh, God, I should have thought about this ahead of time. But there's probably lots of them.
How about Midsummer's Day tents and that kind of thing?
Well, actually, the way that worked, I was kind of the coordinator of the seamstress of the textile production for that visit,
mm-hmm.
and one of the projects that we did was the Tibetan tent. You should have, you know, in addition to a million different black crowns set up so that this could, you know, so that the brocade setups for all his households everywhere around the country and all the black crown ceremonies could leapfrog. You know, we had duplicate airport thrones, household uh-huh. setups, and black crown setups, and they leapfrogged, they moved that way.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, and to completely covering Marpa House with satin drapes,
I mean,
Samadhi cushions turned into a drapery factory for that particular production, he decided that there should be saddle blankets and the Tibetan tent. That was a huge project. And that was amazing. Judith was completely in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
She worked with him directly on mm-hmm. the, you know, figuring out all the appliques and the whole, you know, turning that little model, which I think they made another model,
mm-hmm.
she and Bernd Ladendorf.
Yep, that's right.
Who had his sail-making machines from Germany. That's what they used.
I see. Uh-huh.
And they rented some space. I can't remember where it was, where they did this big production. And Rinpoche loved to go there and watch them working. He loved to watch the seamstresses work. He would often come to wherever we were working and hang out and watch. And whenever we did an installation, he was always there, you know, making suggestions or just appreciating what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful. And also, of course, very inspirational and motivational to have him around.
Absolutely, yeah. And that was the wedding cake house. That was also completely decked out in
satin. That was the second visit.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. That was my probably first big production.
This was the house on Mapleton Street in Boulder that... We call it the wedding cake house because it had such elaborate sort of white trim. It's probably a name for that type of architecture. But anyway, the house was quite grand, and it was totally taken over by the Sangha for the Karmapa's second visit.
It was, yeah.
As I remember, when you walked in the door, everything was draped in fabric.
We actually, for that, it was a three-story house. The top story was a ballroom, remember?
Oh,
just a
open
ballroom
right.
with a hardwood floor, beautiful. Right. We actually asked the people, Rinpoche liked the house, so we convinced, I don't know how this worked, because the board of directors had to do this, probably Carl Springer. We convinced the people to move out, and we put them up somewhere in a hotel or somewhere in an mm-hmm. apartment. I don't know where they went. Mm-hmm. And we took over the house, repainted everything, and even took all the brass hinges. It was all old, high ceilings, hardwood, you know, and stripped all the any finish off and, you know, refinished everything and took all the brass hinges and the brass doorknobs off and polished them mm-hmm. like custom buttons.
Mm-hmm.
This wedding cake house, we actually had several thousand yards of bridal satin dyed, custom dyed in two different colors. One he called imperial yellow, and what was the other? Well, I don't remember the name of the other one, but it was a little bit deeper gold, more like Great Eastern Sun
uh-huh.
color,
uh-huh.
and the inner sanctum of His Holiness was the deeper color, and everything else was the slightly lighter shade.
Oh, interesting.
And then, of course, there was a bird room in that house, covered with satin, and had a brocade ribbon where all the satin seams were that came down the walls.
Because the Karmapa was an incredible bird lover and had birds with him wherever he went.
Oh, here's a good story. Well, I think it's a good story. During the last visit of His Holiness, in Boulder, another thing that happened besides the dream flag was that at one point he called me in to his sitting room at Marpa House and said, the Black Crown box, traveling box, needs a new cover.
Oh.
You know, the brocade cover was who knows how many hundreds of years old, and it was worn to shreds.
Uh-huh.
Can you make a new one? So I said, yeah, sure, we can make a new one, but you have to let me measure the box. And no woman had ever touched the box or been in his room, where the Black Crown had a special throne next to his bed where it lived, you know?
Right.
And he said, no, my monks will measure the box and give you the measurements, and you can make it from that. So I said, okay, but I can't guarantee it will fit. So we did that. He gave us the measurements, and I asked Susan Drummond to make it. And in fact, it was made from the very same brocade as Lady Diana's stiff gown.
Really?
Yes.
The box for the Black Crown.
The cover for the box, yeah.
It was made of the same fabric as Lady Diana's gown.
Yeah. And it had a yellow terry cloth lining. And it's a three-dimensional. Imagine a hat box
uh-huh.
with a brocade cover. And
right.
it had a top that zipped open, you know,
uh-huh.
like a lunchbox kind of, but big. So Susan Drummond made a beautiful, she's an incredible seamstress. She made a beautiful box cover, and mm-hmm. we delivered it, and it didn't fit. It was too tight. So he said, then this was the day of the Black Crown ceremony. He said, okay, you can measure the box. And so I went in and measured the box, and
so you're the first woman to ever touch this box.
Well, theoretically, I guess. Anyway, I measured it.
First human woman.
Yeah, right. So I measured, took all the measurements and knew I had just like, I had 4 hours to pull it all together before the Black Crown ceremony. But he said he wanted it for that night. And he said, can you do it? And I said, well, I'll try. And that wasn't good enough. He said, can you do it? I said, yes. And so I went back to, I was working at that time at George Marshall's house. I went back there and, I had to go out and get some materials, lining materials in the zipper, and I still had some brocade. So I, figured out the pattern and I cut it all. And I think I had someone helping me, pressing and stuff. And so we were working together. to create this box cover, and he told me just to bring it right to the venue where the ceremony was, which was somewhere at the university.
Mackey Auditorium.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I took it there, and that's my cell phone, which I should probably answer.
Okay. So you made this.
So I made this thing, and I think the Black Crown ceremony was supposed to start at, I think people were arriving at 7, and maybe it was supposed to start at 7:30 or something like that. Anyway, I think I rushed in a few minutes after 7:30. I was slightly late, and then, but nothing had started. So I took my seat, and then a few minutes later, a monk came out on stage carrying the box in the brocade I had just finished. I had no idea that it would be part of the ceremony. None at all until that happened. So I was pretty honored.
And was that the same cloth? The same cloth as Lady Diana's?
Yes, it was the same. Yeah, I had just finished the box cover, and there it was being part of the ceremony. And I assume that it's still at Runetic in the same brocade.
Interesting. Yeah. Amazing. That's quite a heritage.
And it will be nice when the 17th Kremova actually gets to do the Black Crown ceremony again.
Wouldn't that be nice?
And hopefully someday in North America.
Right.
Oh, look, I'm almost at the end.
What you forgot to say.
What I forgot to say is that this particular production for this Abhisheka, the installation, and the addition of these wonderful little projects toward the end, like the parasol, has been so reminiscent of projects and installations that I used to do for the Vidyatara. The whole thing has really reminded me. It's been delightful, completely delightful. And work. And one of the interesting things, now I'm talking about being a coordinator, has been that the crew, almost like 95% of the crew is between 55 and 65. And we all, at one point during one of our meetings when we finally moved into the McGinnis room to do the installation, we were having a lunchtime meeting, and Tony Matthews sat there and he looked all around the room and said, "There's something wrong with this picture. Aren't we all 60? And we were all having a really good time. And I have to say, it was very much like the old days.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite delightful. The whole project has been really delightful. Mm. But we are looking forward to passing it on to the 20-year-olds.
Right.
But
so there's a need for a new generation of
seamstress. There's a definite need for a new generation, but it's really a lost art, I'm afraid. But maybe we'll re-find it.
Okay. On that note, thank you very much.